The Everything Apartments podcast is provided with support from the Apartment Association of Greater Los Angeles, better known as AGLA, serving residential landlords throughout Southern California through education and advocacy. Visit aagla.org. Welcome to the Everything Apartments podcast. I'm your host, Eric Christopher. And on this podcast, we cover all topics of multifamily investments, from buying and financing properties, day-to-day operations and management, and also reinvestment strategies. The state of Tennessee, and specifically the Nashville area, is a region of the country that's really seen a wave of in-migration over the last few years. And a lot of that's been coming from California. Heck, I'll bet each and every one of us knows at least one person that's moved from here, pulled up stakes, and went over there. I actually know three or four that have done that. And we've seen the same thing going on in places like Florida and Texas. But the reasons for this out-migration from California are becoming kind of more vivid each day. But instead of focusing on the causes or the why part of, you know, what people are doing, today we'll explore what the real estate market, specifically the multifamily market, is doing in Tennessee and specifically the Nashville area. Today we have a great guest who's one of the top multifamily brokers in Nashville and also works really the entire state and a couple states next door to it, like Alabama and North Carolina. But first, I'll tell you about our firm, WSC Realty Advisors and WSC Property Management. WSC has been helping buyers and sellers and managing properties here in Long Beach for over 16 years. Now, let's say you're tired of self-managing your building. You want a little more time off and a little more ease of mind, or maybe the management that you have now is just not giving you the responsivity or reporting or any of the facets of management. WSC can help. WSC never wants to be the biggest firm in Long Beach. Instead, we stay smaller and a little more agile to bring you the quality that you really want. We can also help you if you're looking to acquire more units either here or out of state, for example, in Tennessee. Visit wsc-pm.com. Call, text, or email us. All the information's in the show notes if you're listening, and it's obviously right over my shoulder if you're watching on YouTube. Mention the Everything Apartments podcast and get your first 2 months of management absolutely free. Whatever the challenge is with your property, WSC has the solution. Today, we have with us Adam Klink, who is a managing partner at a firm called Capstone Companies. Capstone is based in Charlotte, North Carolina, but has offices throughout the region. And Adam is located in Nashville. Adam attended Michigan State University and completed his degree in supply chain management with a minor in information technology. He's currently a candidate to obtain a CCIM designation. And for some of those out there that may not be familiar with that, I think the best way to describe it is sort of like a master's degree in commercial real estate. It's no joke. It takes a lot of time and effort to get that designation. And on top of that, Adam's a licensed pilot, runs marathons. He finished the Boston Marathon, an avid mountaineer, worked with NASCAR pit crews, spent summers working on fishing boats in the Bering Sea. And most recently, Adam was part of a team that placed second in a sailboat race that went from Cape Town, South Africa to Australia. Now, Adam has listings in Nashville, but not just there, all over Tennessee, and also active in the states around it, Alabama, North Carolina, and Georgia. Adam, it's great to have you here with us today.
Thanks, Eric. I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, you're like an adventure. I kind of wanted to read in your bio how you have any time to do commercial real estate with all those fun activities you're working on.
Yeah, well, you know, most of that's taken place before my brokerage career. But yeah, I've had the fortunate opportunity to have some pretty incredible experiences in my life. So certainly no complaints. And I wish I could take on more of those challenges, these days. But, you know, too busy here in Nashville.
Oh yeah, I'm sure you are. So did you grow up in Michigan?
Yeah, Michigan. So my entire life I lived in Michigan up until college, and after graduation I moved to the West Coast, to Washington State actually. You know, worked in a project called the Hanford Project with Bechtel, a large construction and engineering company, and I bounced around to various Bechtel projects around the country, around the world. Throughout that time, started buying real estate on the side, and that's ultimately what got me into brokerage. You know, I found a passion, desire to get involved with real estate and, single family homes up to multifamily and, you know, now brokerage.
Just bouncing back to Bechtel, anybody from this area, specifically kind of Orange County, which I'm very close to, everybody knows Bechtel because their headquarters is down in Irvine. And my whole childhood, I always looked at their office. It was like this sinister black looking building. And I always wondered as a kid, like, well, what goes on inside there? And then as I got to know what they're doing, so that's definitely a powerhouse in the engineering construction. So you started there. So what brought you to Tennessee?
I'd come in contact with the owners and founders of Capstone, one of which is my brother. He joined maybe the fourth or fifth individual to join the company. And at the time, they're just based out of Charlotte, North Carolina, looking to expand. And I was in Texas with Bechtel working on the Keystone Pipeline. And they simply just said, hey, do you want to open an office for us in Nashville? I really didn't know much about brokerage then. I didn't have much of a sales background at all. I knew a little bit about real estate, and you know, but not a ton. It was mostly related to single family asset. Quit my job with Bechtel, took a few months off to, you know, travel around the world, and then came back here to Nashville and, you know, hit the ground running. I was actually had never visited Nashville before I moved here full time.
Wow. Okay. And so when was that? Did you get to Nashville?
Probably would have been about 9 or 10 years ago. So what's that, like 2012, 2013?
Okay. So out here, that was kind of, we're pulling ourselves out of the doldrums of the Great Recession, real estate wise. And I kind of look back at 12 as kind of the year we started to regain footing, at least out here. So you've seen the dynamic there, a la 10 years ago up to fast forwarding to now. I mean, you've seen this wild uptrend in migration and the whole thing, to where, you know, you didn't just get there a year and a half ago. You saw a dynamic, right, from 2012 to, you know, you'll tell me when you really felt the ground rumbling, like you started meeting people that were moving in there or something. Like, when did it occur to you that Nashville got on the radar, like, say, nationally as a place to move to?
Yeah, well, you know, I worked with, prior to joining Capstone after I graduated college, it was a 5-year time period. And I know in that time I read about Nashville and, you know, various magazines and, you know, TV shows, things like that, and had heard great things. That was really between 2008, you know, the heart of the recession, to 2012. So I moved to Nashville, say 2012, 2013. And at that time, Nashville was kind of already on fire, you know, and I joke that I should have come probably 2 years sooner, 2 or 3 years sooner. But in hindsight, I still, you know, came at a pretty good time. And Nashville really hasn't slowed down since then. You know, I'd say 2010 is really when Nashville really picked up most momentum, and it hasn't trailed off. It had always been a statistic of Nashville has 100 people a day moving to the city, in migration of 100 people. Well, during COVID, that declined. I think we were maybe down to like 75 or 80 people in migration, maybe less. But just a few weeks ago, the data came out that Nashville's back to the 100 person a day in migration. So, good news for Nashville.
Yeah, I was reading the same thing, and it's intuitive, because I mentioned in the intro, everybody I know, and I would imagine this kind of goes across the board in California, it's kind of been a wild time here of seeing your friends and a lot of people that you know moving out of state, not just to Tennessee, but to a place like Texas and Florida. With that kind of in migration, now, we've got a different market now, at least out here, and I'm sure there with lending. You've got 100 people a day coming in there. Do you see any kind of balance between, okay, we've had a pretty steep interest rate hike. You see any differing demand, or is it just like a fire hose that's going to overrun whatever interest rates there? It's not going to affect demand that much. Like, what's your take on that?
Rent growth has slowed quite a bit. I mean, and depending on the submarket, primarily downtown Nashville, you know, you've even seen a decline in rents recently. But it's tough to really gauge the actual true rent number, because, you know, there's so many units under construction and in the development pipeline that, it's, you know, there's always concessions being given and different incentives to get people in the door and to sign leases. So, you know, I think the in-migration is going to result in Nashville having much better than most markets throughout this, whatever you want to call it, downturn or high interest rate environment that we're in. You know, but I think what's going to happen is, you know, we sell a lot of development land in addition to existing apartments. That has slowed down, you know, dramatically, and especially in the core. All these developers who are sitting on the sidelines right now, you know, once these the deals that are under construction lease up, you know, then there's going to be essentially a period where we have no new units coming online. And then that's going to really, you know, jack up those rents. So we're probably talking about 18 months from now, you know, once this pipeline gets built out and leased up, you know, once rates come back down and stabilize, I think there's going to be a huge spike in asking rents of apartments. You know, but, you know, when you move out to the suburbs, Nashville's growing not just in the core, it's in the suburbs as well. And it's much more steady there. You know, there hasn't been a massive uptick in deliveries. Yeah, I think we're faring much better than most markets out there, fortunately.
That's it's an interesting dichotomy, because a lot of the out migration from here or places like, I don't know, Chicago or you know, New York for that matter, it's a lot of it has to do with housing. And so, like, I look at California kind of like as the model of how not to balance supply and demand. So the government out here puts so many hurdles and costs in front of you in order to build anything that, like, you're kind of projecting, the demand on the existing stock goes up. Obviously, prices go up with that. But then they add insult to injury by then cramming down rent control on the owners out here. And it's like, well, you're not letting the market balance itself, so you're going to go and penalize the landlord. What's the government's sort of posture on growth, rent control?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely the opposite size end of the spectrum, you know, than California. However, there have been so many new units over the last 10 years, you know, probably 20,000 units have come online in the entire MSA, that you get a lot of pushback. And so it's certainly not as easy to build new apartments as it used to be. Part of that also is Nashville and the geography here, the topography. We do have quite a few hills, but then also most of our soil is rock. And so it's very costly to build new construction here, especially in the core. And then, you know, nowadays it's kind of council by council, you know, so small geographic areas within the MSA, some are more open and receptive to new development than others. Right now, Nashville is going through a mayoral election. There's different mayors that are, you know, more pro development. You know, we've seen some, you know, sites that we've sold have incredible pushback from the local citizens, and that, you know, set up web pages and you know, big committees to stop developments and do anything they can to slow them down. You know, make false claims about things just to you know, threat lawsuits just to slow down these developments. You know, yet then there's other submarkets that you know, you talk with a council person, they're like, yeah, we'd love to have more apartments here. You know, naturally, the submarkets that are open to more development typically are lower rent levels, lower income, you know, and the submarkets more opposed to new development or higher incomes and higher rent levels. I think that is why you see higher rents achieved in Nashville compared to like a Charlotte, for example, North Carolina, because, you know, Charlotte, they don't have the topography challenges that we do. There's only so many places you can build apartments here.
Sociological continuum that we're all in, just in different stages of the, you know, development process.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of, you know, personal emotion that gets into it and personal pushback against new development. But at the same time, there's been so much growth in Nashville that there are real, you know, roadblocks that we encounter too. I mean, usually it's around sewer capacity and things like that. You know, these cities have grown so quickly, you know, that the municipalities don't have the, you know, the bandwidth to accept new units. You know, to some extent that probably helps because they're, you know, maybe some of these things are getting slowed down because the municipality physically cannot accept or water capacity or, you know, fire capacity, whatever it may be.
Dip your toe into a good point is I was thinking about infrastructure in general capacities, right? So I had to scurry from Broadway to the airport. You know, my gal and I were inside, I think, Roberts, which is our favorite place. Oh, you know, do we have time for just one more? We're not thinking about that. It's rush hour. And we're like, oh, crap, are we going to make the airport in time? We get on the freeway to go down to the airport, which isn't far, and we hit a little traffic, and we're going, oh, no. You know, our minds are always like toward the L.A. traffic that's like an hour. We kind of got through there in about 15 minutes. And we're like, oh, that was easy. But the point I was getting at is, I mean, at 100 people a day, it's not going to take long for the entire infrastructure to be kind of challenged. And then does that put Nashville Metro, Nashville surrounding into kind of like this infrastructure upgrade thing for, you know, like 10 years moving forward or something?
Yeah, you know, so over my time being here, Nashville has gone through quite a few efforts to pass legislation for public transportation, whether it's light rail or, you know, electric and dedicated high speed bus lines. And it seems to have pretty much been shot down on all fronts whenever it is kind of on the ballot. Now, I think those things would help. But again, what makes it even more costly to do that here is just the rock. You know, you can't just put in, do all these big infrastructure projects because you are dealing with rock, you know, pretty much everywhere you want to build. I spend a lot of time in Charlotte, North Carolina, as well. And, you know, they've done a great job with their light rail system and they have a trolley system. You know, I wish Nashville would do something like that. You know, for whatever reason, we haven't. When you look at the data, though, kind of globally, our commute time in Nashville is still some of the best in the country, you know, even when you look at, you know, relative to the size of our MSA and population. So, you know, for me being here 10 years, it seems like it's gotten much worse because it has. But, you know, statistically, it's much better than a lot of people out there dealing with.
Yeah, no doubt. We're all in our little bubble and whatever we're used to, we compare it and then, you know, overall picture. But I do agree with you. It'd be interesting to see how the municipalities and even the state kind of reacts and how fast they can do things vis-a-vis somewhere like California. We were talking about this two-building portfolio because that's a lot of the clients that I have and people that listen to the show are, you know, kind of B and C investors out here. Look at the regional publication. They're talking about brand new units, the high rises. Obviously, there's T-cranes on a 360-degree view in downtown. But that product type usually is like separate from the B and C. So like on a B and C class asset, which I saw those two you had listed, what have you seen gone with cap rates? I don't know, last 3 or 4 years, like it started maybe in 2018 as an X cap rate. And now like, where are you trending and about where do you land on something like that portfolio?
So not, I think you're talking about, there's one 16 unit property and then a 22 unit that we have on the market, different parts of town. Assets of that size don't typically become available in Nashville. You know, the low, I guess, sample size that actually hits the market. And then a lot that do, their highest and best use may not be apartments. So in some cases, they would just be demolished and you'd build, you know, townhomes there or new apartments or new condos, you know, because usually you might have this old one or two story building that sits on a half an acre and it has whatever, 4 units, 5 units. And, you know, you can knock that down and build 40 units, for example, you know. So the data isn't great on what those trade for or historically have. The other aspect of it is because the tourism that we have here in Nashville, the short-term rental or Airbnb market is so strong that a lot of these properties have sold over the years to be turned into short-term rentals, allowing, you know, as long as they have the zoning that permits that, you know, clarifying, you know, for your question, I would say historically when rates were low, you could probably buy smaller buildings at like a 4.5 to a 5 cap, you know, and now it's gone up a decent amount, but it hasn't, the increase in cap rate, you know, the spread isn't as high as it's been on, say, like where new construction was 18 months ago to where new construction is now. I think, you know, the spread on cap rates is much greater there.
You know, for quite some time in this uptrend, which I call, you know, essentially 10 years or at least 9 from 12 to 20, we popped right out of COVID with really no lasting effect on that. But, you know, even C-grade stuff in like grittier sides of town was 5 cap. The pristine stuff, high 3s, you know, where you're close to the water.
Yep.
We are seeing, you know, I don't know if you'd opine on the same way there as here, but what I read is even in the doldrums of that last recession, like the A grade stuff, never negligible value loss, storehouse of capital, plenty of money to just park there and preserve versus the C grade stuff, higher management, a little tougher, that's where we saw the cap rate unwind more distinctively. And I think we're right in the middle of that right now, even though transaction volume on quantity is a little tough to read, but I can kind of just feel that happening where the five cap deal in the C grade neighborhood is now going to be a six cap again, based on, you know, the rates where they are. I just didn't know if you were kind of seeing or feeling the same dynamic there in tougher areas.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that's pretty much what we're seeing. Nashville, oddly, does not have a whole lot of bad areas. I mean, there's maybe one or two small pockets that are less desirable, but by and large, our bad areas are not as bad as most cities experience. I think there is so much interest and so much momentum in, you know, real estate in Nashville that for these smaller deals, you know, you're selling them to more local high net worth individuals or, you know, a group of guys who go in and, you know, they're not looking at it as underwriting every deal with a fine tooth comb, like, you know, a 300 unit class A deal downtown, you know. So I think they're willing to accept lower returns in a lot of cases, you know, because they're looking at it for other benefits of, you know, depreciation and, you know, mortgage payoff, things like that.
Yeah, and I think the prospects are good to see an appreciation uptrend. That's kind of been the backbone of out here is forever is people will buy stuff with negligible cash flow in a, you know, just in a cyclical manner and go, yeah, like it's going to go up. Even if you bought at the height of the peak before the last recession, if I said that right, about 2007 was when everything was at its peak here. Even the people that bought then, you just hold it. You got a very strong confidence that it's going to keep on the uptrend. And I feel like that's probably characteristic of where you are, that you've got a good run ahead of you on buy today and 5 years, you're going to be ahead. I've got a good friend and maybe a guy you might want to know at some point. He was a trainer of mine. I did like broker training with this outfit called Rod Santamassimo. I don't know if you ever heard of that name.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
He's got kind of a cool podcast as well. But the trainer I had was a guy named Bo Barron. Bo is out of Owensboro, Kentucky. Great guy. And I'll kick you his podcast. He and his brother, so he's the real estate guy. His brother is like an actor and a comedian out of Chicago. And the two of them, basically the premise of the show is like he's going to explain commercial real estate to his ADHD brother.
Yeah.
And it's like this really entertaining thing. And I'll kick that to you. It's called Commercially Speaking. But the reason I kind of bring him into our discussion is he's up there in Owensboro and we're talking about Bowling Green. And he says, oh, yeah, like I think that I-65 corridor, you know, not just Nashville, but maybe like going all the way down to Huntsville up to Bowling Green. He goes, I got to believe there's like a really strong 10-year run in that corridor. I mean, the regional aspect, where do you see that driving toward?
Yeah, I mean, from a geographic standpoint, I think it's one of the reasons why Nashville has grown so, as much as it has. I mean, you know, I forget the statistic, but, you know, it's from Nashville with a 24-hour truck, you know, semi drive, you can hit 85% of the population or something in the country. And then, you know, with a 3-hour flight, you can, you know, we can hit 85% of the population. So, you know, Nashville has a great geographic location to you know, cater and kind of hit much of the population of the country. You know, essentially you go from Indianapolis down to Louisville, down to Nashville, and then you can, you know, either go to Chattanooga and then Atlanta, or you can go to the other direction and go to Huntsville and then Birmingham. From Nashville, you can get to Huntsville in, you know, an hour and a half, get to Chattanooga in 2 hours. You know, you can get to Bowling Green in 1 hour, Louisville, 2 hours. So, you know, I completely agree with what you're saying. And, you know, one exciting thing that's happened in the past year and a half is Ford Motor Company announced two massive plants and investments into both Kentucky and Tennessee. So one of them is about halfway between Nashville and Louisville. And that's where they're going to be building some, you know, electric powered vehicles. It's called Blue Oval. That one is in Elizabethtown, Kentucky. You know, I would say they're going to have probably 6,000 full-time employees there. It's about a $6 billion investment. Wow. The second plant is almost identical in size, $6 billion and 6,000 employees. And that's about halfway between Jackson, Tennessee and Memphis, Tennessee. So to get there from Nashville, it's probably a 2.5-hour drive. To go from one to the other, you're pretty much going to go through Nashville. And so I think it's going to continue to make Nashville up an EV hub, you know, and I think we'll see a lot of sub suppliers come in, a lot of electric vehicle technology providers that move their businesses here. Because before Ford came in, we all already had Nissan here in town. You know, General Motors has a big plant in Spring Hill, just south of Nashville. So I think a lot of exciting electric vehicle, trends to come in this entire area, going up to Bowling Green and Owensboro even.
Now, interesting stuff, because we out here where we are, we don't have usually a single employer that will move the needle like that.
Yeah.
Got an industrial base. There's pluses or minuses around that. But it's interesting to look at different parts of the country where that's a systemic shift for like a region, a county, a city, whereby, you got, 6,000 bodies coming in. That probably means 12,000 with family that all of a sudden, housing, support services, all that stuff. And then, watch that stuff kind of drop out of the sky. And you got a regional center, Target, Home Depot, all that stuff. My girlfriend and I just got back from a trip, and I kind of wish I had known you then, but we went from Charlotte, which that was my first time, beautiful city. I was driving around there going, wow, it's so clean. Mm-hmm. All the way up to Raleigh, Durham to visit some friends, and then all the way across from Knoxville down to Chattanooga and then up to Nashville. So it looks like Tennessee to me is basically the 40 running east-west, which, oh, by the way, that dead ends out here by us in Barstow, dead ends to the west, with the exception of Chattanooga. So like we're talking about Nashville. So you're active all over the state of Tennessee. What's the dichotomy of cap rate, say, using Memphis, Chattanooga, or Knoxville, which I really like. Knoxville is a fun place to be. And then I saw some listings in other parts of the state.
So out of our Nashville office, we cover Kentucky, Tennessee, and then into Alabama. Typically, the hottest markets or markets where there's the most interest would be Nashville first. Second is probably a tie between Chattanooga and Huntsville, and then kind of the third would be, I'll say, a Knoxville, Birmingham, and a Louisville and a Lexington. There's some other cities, you could say Clarksville, Tennessee is up there near Nashville interest level. So is Bowling Green. You definitely have the lowest cap rates in Nashville. I'd say second lowest cap rates would be a mix between Chattanooga and Huntsville. And then once you kind of go to Birmingham, Knoxville, Louisville, Lexington, those would be kind of one tier outside, and Memphis as well. Memphis is a 3-hour drive from Nashville, much different market and dynamics going on there. I'd say cap rates in Memphis are probably almost a, entire percentage point higher than Nashville.
If you had to pick one of those tertiary markets, let's say I called you and I said, hey, I want to invest whatever, X 100,000 or whatever, but I don't want to be in Nashville. I feel like it's too blown out. Yeah. Where would you drop me?
I think Clarksville is experiencing a lot of growth, and that's just 45 minutes northwest of Nashville. I'd say cap rates in Clarksville are probably 0.25% higher than Nashville, so you're probably at, right now, maybe a 5.5, you could say. Where Nashville would be a 5.25, for example. If you moved southeast, that'd be Murfreesboro, 45-minute drive outside of Nashville. There you're probably 5.25 to 5.5. Knoxville's, by and large, probably a half percent higher than Nashville. If you go even further to east, like to Johnson City, Kingsport, Bristol, Tennessee, you're probably more aligned with the Memphis. You're probably 75 basis points higher than Nashville.
Interesting stuff. And then what we always think about when we plug a cap rate assumption is like out here in my management portfolio, I've run 3% or less vacancy for a long time. I've probably run for the last 4 or 5 years at maybe 1 to 2% vacancy. What do you feel like the vacancy rate runs in Nashville and then outside?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say historically it's 3%. It all depends on the submarket, and mainly the only reason it'd be above 3% is if there's a large amount of supply coming online. At the same time, in those cases, there's, concessions and incentives being offered. The only markets where you might have, higher than 3% vacancy would be maybe the Tri-City markets, like I mentioned, Kingsport, Bristol. Memphis certainly has some pockets that have vacancy problems, I'd say upwards of 5-10% in some cases. Vacancy is not really an issue, mainly because the in-migration that we have.
You can intonate on like class A, class B, class C on a per unit. Yeah. We've kind of already covered cap rate, but what's that looking like these days?
Price per unit, I'd say, you know, class A, you're at probably on average, $350,000 a unit. You know, class B, say you're at $250,000 a unit. And then class C, you're probably at $150,000 a unit. Lower in some cases. Class C is more, I'd say bought and sold off of price per pound and less on in-place cash flow. You know, something else that we're seeing that's interesting in Nashville is that over the last 3 to 4 years, these groups have gotten involved in converting old motels, exterior corridor motels mainly, into apartments, you know, into micro units. And so they didn't exist 4 years ago. And, you know, right now we've actually sold quite a few of them. There's probably at least four of these deals, maybe more in Nashville, where there's, you know, there's an old 200 to 300 square foot motel room that's now has a 12-month lease signed on it, really anywhere from $1,000 a month up to $1,200 a month. Very strong price per foot when you consider it's only a 250 to 300 square foot unit.
See, I think you had one of those on your website, didn't you? Maybe like, was it in Chattanooga that was a commercial or a motel conversion?
Yeah, it's possible. I think we do. I'm not sure where offhand it is, but you know, yeah, that's something that's gotten a lot more activity recently.
Chattanooga is a cool town. Like, I'd never been down there. I'd been across from Knoxville to Nashville 3 times, but my gal and I were like, let's go check out Chattanooga. Oh, that's a really cool town.
Yeah, Chet, it's an incredible city. I used to live in Seattle for a while, and I compared to Seattle quite a bit. You know, obviously it doesn't have quite the amount of mountains, and you know, it's not on the ocean, but you know, same vibe, same overall feel. You know, if I was to pick another place in Tennessee to live, that's absolutely where it would be.
And we accidentally stumbled upon the Jack Daniel's distillery on the way up to Nashville.
Yeah, that's pretty cool too. They have a nice nice free tour that they offer. It's very well done.
I didn't realize that region's sort of like the Napa Valley of Tennessee whiskey, you know?
Yeah, whiskey, and there's a few vineyards over here, and especially once you go up to into Kentucky, you know, all the Kentucky bourbon, you know, the bourbon trail, and it's, I assume, their main tourism driver.
All right, so tell me a little more than I gave in the intro about Capstone. How can you help people? Do you have a mailing list or a e-blast?
Quick background, Capstone's been around for around 15 years, started in Charlotte, North Carolina, and we've grown to become the country's largest privately held apartment brokerage. So offices everywhere from Tampa to Charlotte to Virginia, Cincinnati, Indianapolis, Boise, Idaho, Seattle, a few offices in Colorado, Dallas, Oklahoma. So really everywhere in between, you know, we will be expanding to, but not yet announced. The apartment brokerage side, I'd say 75% of that is existing assets. The remaining 25% is development land. We also have a manufactured housing platform, which I believe is the country's largest public or private broker of mobile home parks. And then we also have an equity arm, which really helps mainly developers, but also acquisition groups source equity for developments or for projects that they're buying. That equity arm is probably about 4 years old. They've successfully sourced equity all across the country already, and pretty exciting for us to be able to sell a piece of land, have our equity arm find equity for the buyer of that land, and then ultimately sell the asset on the back end. So, you know, happy to help anyone out there look for equity, looking for apartments, or, you know, anything in between.
It sounds like you got your hooks in a lot of different ways to help people from end to end. You're thinking about doing a 1031 exchange out of California, getting out of this overbearing government overreach, high taxes, everything else. Adam will be a great pivot point, knowledge base. If you run into that 1031 exchange, he's probably a fellow that can help you. Adam, it was great having you with us today. I'm going to put all your information in the show notes here on the podcast platform and also on YouTube.
Sounds good. Thank you, Eric. I appreciate the time and look forward to hearing from some of your listeners.
This has been the Everything Apartments podcast. I'm your host, Eric Christopher. Stay tuned for another episode coming soon.